Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
I don't think you're ready for this. I mean, if you're driving and listening, I think you might need to pull over to the side of the road because we have a powerhouse of three incredible doctors in the house that are joining us. Boarded rehabilitation specialist, a new book, Canine Exercise Therapy, a lot to unpack. We got Dr. Kara Amstutz in the house, Dr. Leilani Alvarez, and Dr. Jennifer Repack in the house. Hi, everyone.
Woo, hi.
Hello.
I'm pulling over, Adam. I can't take the excitement.
Put my foot on the brake.
Yes, I love it. Well, let's go ahead and introduce yourselves to the audience so that way we know who's who. So Dr. Kara, go ahead. Take it away.
Hi, my name is Dr. Kara Amstutz. I am a veterinarian in Springfield, Missouri. I own a small pain management mobility specialty practice. And I also am the director of clinical education for Canine Rehab Institute.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Dr. Leilani.
Hi, Adam. I'm Leilani Alvarez. I am the head of integrative and rehabilitative medicine at the Schwartzman Animal Medical Center in New York City. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And Dr. Jennifer.
Hi, Adam. I'm Jennifer Repack. I am an assistant clinical professor at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine in the integrative and mobility medicine department.
Wow. Awesome. Thank you for all the great work that you do. Incredible profession. I know that you've just came back from your conference there. So lots of great key takeaways, I'm sure. So thank you for all the great work and sharing that knowledge with us, the general practitioners and the audience out there. Okay. So exercise, Dr. Jennifer, you know, it's often prescribed casually in general practice, restrict activity or quote, gradually increasing walks. And we have this wonderful book, so it systematizes exercise therapy. So what are we going wrong, or what are we getting wrong, at least, in the way that we're currently prescribing movement for dogs?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Historically, I think we're generally pretty risk averse when it comes to exercise. And we've been taught, you know, the animals are really fragile after surgery, you don't want to break them and kind of do no harm, just, you know, restrict them as much as possible. And what we've done historically is we've kind of taken them from complete restriction and then suddenly saying, okay, now figure it out on your own and gradually introduce to normal activity. And we're not taking owners through that step-by-step process in the recovery and leaving a lot basically up to the owners in terms of using their own judgment, which, as we know, maybe not always great. You know, you don't go from recovering from a TPLO and very, very lame, lots of swelling after surgery, 6 weeks, the radiographs look normal, and then dog park, you know. But I think that is the reality. That's what a lot of our patients are doing. And so being able to kind of break things down into more of a stepwise process and, you know, hold the hand of our clients and of our rehab practitioners, I think is a very important gap that we're hoping to fill.
I love that. This the other day, one of our neighbors, Labrador, had a TPLO done, and surprisingly, she didn't follow the directions, and she was going for rehab physical therapy with the dog, but the dog did so well, so well, it tore its other one. So she's like, but he was acting fine. I was like, you have to do those exercises. To your point, there are restricted, limited exercises, and she took her to the dog park, and boom, you know. So it's so important to talk about these kinds of things. So, okay, Leilani, in human medicine, exercise is considered medicine. You know, I hear that myself. I've experienced this myself. So at what point should veterinarians start thinking of exercise as a dose-dependent therapeutic intervention rather than just enrichment?
Right away, I would say. Yeah. There is no question in my mind, at least, and I realize I might be biased, but there is no medicine, no prescription that you can write that brings as much benefit as exercise does in all domains. I think we think about exercise as improving our mobility, and it certainly does, but there are benefits to our brain, our mind, especially for dogs. In fact, going back on the question you just asked, with, we had restricted activity, especially after IVDD surgery or TPO low, we just really restrict dogs. And that comes with a lot of stress that can hamper recovery. And if we can provide a guided method of perhaps activity modification rather than just restriction, we're going to see benefits, I think, psychosocial for our patients. And of course, exercise has cardiopulmonary benefits. That's very well documented in people, as well as improving bone health. It's really, really important that you're weight bearing through that bone, particularly think about a post-op TPO low. You have an osteotomy. And if you're restricting their activity, you're actually potentially delaying that osteotomy site from healing because we all know Wolf's Law, you have to load through the bone to actually get that callus formation. Of course, it benefits muscles. It benefits the neurologic system. You get better coordination. Proprioception is off, definitely, if you have a joint injury. So, I mean, Adam, if you mention a body system, exercise is beneficial for every body system. So
Even
there's no.
the
Yes, definitely. In
Yeah.
fact, we see rabbits at AMC that have, similar to horses. They get colic if they're not eating, and I get them moving. I mean, that's the way that you can improve that gastric stasis, is get them moving. So yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. And Dr. Alvarez, when you're designing an exercise protocol for a post-TPLO patient versus a chronic OA or osteoarthritis patient, what fundamentally changes in your thought process there?
They're pretty different conditions. For one thing, I would say that I think a lot of people have this notion that, swimming is great and that's just like a really benign exercise that you can do for everybody. Movement in general is one of the best things you can do for OA because that's how the joint gets its nutrition. But I'm not going to put a post-op TPLO dog in the pool and have them swim. And so we're really the biggest changes I would say in the focus is that we're recovering from surgery in the case of the TPLO low versus OA is a degenerative disease and it's really lifelong management. And so with the TPLO low in particular, we're going to be doing assessments to understand where the patient is at their tissue healing phase. That's really what this book is about, and we're teaching that. It's not this recipe that you can follow, for a post-op TPLO, and this is what you do at week two, and this is what you do at week four. It's really about what's the dog's strength level, what is their functional mobility. We have specific tests that we can do to test their functional abilities, and then we design exercises based on where they are at in their recovery phase. For OA, it's also not a recipe either because there are very different degrees of osteoarthritis. And it's not even something that I would say you can look at the x-ray and say. It's really about assessing that patient functionally and then determining the correct. But in general, I would say for our TPO lows, it's really about the tissue healing phase, and we're going to modify according to that. And OA, it's about, where are they at in level of weakness and functional impairment.
Excellent. And Dr. Jennifer, what are some of the most common mistakes general practitioners make when they attempt rehab exercises without any formal training?
I love this question. I think right now rehab is, very, very hot, as we know. We have a lot of practices that are introducing rehab, and I see a lot of all patients getting the same therapy. And I would say probably the most common ones are everything gets laser and everything gets underwater treadmill. And if it's not getting better, then you just keep doing the same, more of the same. And there's a lot more nuance that goes into formulating an appropriate exercise plan for a patient. And not only do we need to take into account stages of healing and different types of conditions that our patients have, they're not all created equal, but also not all individuals follow the same path of recovery. We know complications happen, and often actually patients are referred to rehab, unfortunately, when things aren't going right. So the plans need to be adjusted per that patient. And so Making sure that we are also not prescribing exercises that may be contraindicated for certain cases. So, for example, swimming, I would not swim a patient that just had back surgery, for example. Even though in a human that might not be as bizarre, but in an animal that doesn't know we have the best of intentions, swimming is a highly unregulated activity, and so we cannot control what the back does when they're swimming, and it also does not help with gait retraining. Unfortunately, in our general medical background, we're just not taught exercise therapy or anything really about rehab as our standard DVM programs. Hopefully, that someday will change. But a lot of this knowledge is dependent on taking these additional rehab certification courses or pursuing board certification through a 3-year program.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing that. Dr. Carr, can you walk us through how you assess whether an exercise is either too easy, appropriately challenging, or actually harmful, just like what Jennifer was talking about?
Great question. And I think this is a reason why veterinarians are scared because they don't know, right? And they don't want to hurt their patients, and pet owners don't want to hurt their pets. So the natural reaction is do nothing. And unfortunately, like Leilani mentioned, if we do nothing, that just can really compound the issue that we're trying to address. So first of all, when it comes to an exercise, you have to understand what's your goal with this exercise. A lot of folks think exercise is all about strengthening. And that's true, but usually we're not starting off with strength, strength, strength. We are starting off with getting the pet to just put the leg down, improving proprioception, improving weight bearing and balance. And then we start to add in things like early strengthening, early appropriate gait management, and things like that. So that's the first thing. You have to really, if you're going to prescribe an exercise, you have to know what is this exercise for. And then, there's all kinds of data in the human literature looking at intensity of exercise and what's the perfect amount of intensity to get the most bang for your buck when it comes to strengthening. And there's a lot of information about like one max rep at 100% of your strength. You can do it one time at 100% of your strength. And looking at that, taking it down to like what's an appropriate, sustainable way to strengthen. And in the human literature, it's 6 to 7 reps, 2 sets of 6 to 7 reps. That's the recommendation. We do not have that literature in the veterinary world at this point, and we can't ask a dog to lift a dumbbell and find out what is its one max rep. But what we can do is we can use the dog's own body weight to resist gravity, and that's a great way to strengthen. And then really what we do is we look at the dog. We let our patient guide us. And the things that we look at is how is the patient maintaining their form? Are they able to do these exercises and maintain proper posture? Are they compensating? Are they sitting down? Are they losing interest in whatever you're trying to get them to do? Are they panting and they can't like catch their breath, even if you give them little rest breaks? Are they becoming more lame? I mean, that would be a big red flag to stop whatever you're doing. And then the other thing that I think about is, even if they're able to do those exercises, through your session, whatever you're doing that day, but if they're very, very sore the next couple of days, that means you did too much. So what you do is you assess how the patient's doing within the treatment, within the session, and then also the next couple of days, and then you make adjustments. So we can take a really simple exercise and intensify it. So if the dog's just like able to maintain its posture and breezing through whatever you're doing, you can intensify exercises with things like having them do the exercise on an unstable surface, or putting the front feet up, or having them do more repetitions. Or if it's too hard, then we can modify it and we add stability back to the exercise. We reduce the intensity, we reduce the frequency, and we let our patients guide us through that course. And again, that's scary to somebody who's never done this, right? They don't know what to look for. They don't know where to start. And that's one thing I love about this book is it gives you those guidelines.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I'm laughing because, of course, My dachshunds have to be acting up. That's okay. It's part of the whole show here. It's part of the whole show. Dr. Alvarez, I'm seeing a lot more athletic dogs on social media. I'm seeing the sports happening. A lot of pet owners are getting influenced by it, which is great. Agility, fly ball, working dogs, you name it. How does preventative exercise therapy differ from rehab exercise therapy?
Yeah, this is a great question, particularly for these amateur sporting events where we have a phenomenon where they may not be doing too much during the week. And then on the weekend, we have this explosive activity where we're asking them to do a lot. And we may not have an injury, but definitely preventative strategies for stabilizing the core. That's a big one. Of course, we know that as humans, that if we have a strong core, it can really benefit if we do have an injury. But if you have a strong core, it might prevent you from becoming injured. The other thing that is really, really key in preventative strategies is proprioception. This is an area that's key to any exercise program. In general, I would say you want to have in your conditioning program when you're preparing these dogs for these more explosive activities, competition events, definitely for the working dog, is you want to have a balanced program. Yeah, just as Jen was saying, and Kara, that everybody wants to go to strength, but it's not just about strength. It's really about combining strength, but also endurance, proprioception, and coordination. I would say that's probably one of the key ones that you want to introduce as a preventative strategy. It's also, as you probably know, Adam, if you're doing a lot of weights, but you're losing flexibility, that can actually predispose you to injury too. So you want to make sure that you're having exercises that focus on flexibility and range of motion so that the movement that you're doing actually is a full excursion. It actually can help you have a better contraction if it's combined with flexibility. The muscle is actually going to be able to elicit a better quality contraction when it has the proper amount of flexibility. And then finally, as preventative strategies, when you're doing a conditioning program, you do want to introduce exercises that are specific to the task that you're asking the dog, because that could be very different according to the different events that the dog is participating in. So, for example, in a bomb detection dog, they may need to get up on their hindquarters to search for something up high. So, you want to be doing activities that really build that hind limb strength and that core activity to support their spine when they're having to reach up high that way. Versus a fly ball dog or agility, you need to train for sprinting and being able to achieve that, quickly. So just as in human athletes, it needs to be specific for the sport. But don't forget to include things like core stabilization and proprioceptive work. That's really, really important.
Yeah, really important.
Oh,
Flexibility.
let me just
Yeah.
add one more thing that everybody
Please.
forgets, and this is true for human athletes too: rest. Rest is so important for injury prevention. One of the big things that happens when people get really excited about sports is they just want to go, 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 train, 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 train. And if you don't rest, that's probably one of the biggest things that puts you at risk for injury, is your body actually needs time to remodel those muscle fibers and to adjust to the heightened activity that you're demanding of the tissues. So always important to have rest days. Generally, we recommend 1 to 2 rest days per week. And if you have a competition event coming up, you actually want to scale down as the competition is approaching, and that actually allows them to perform better.
Wow, great tips, Dr. Leilani. It's really good. I love it. Okay, Dr. Kara, this is all wonderful, but it really does boil down to a little bit of can the pet owner do some of these exercises too? And we know that there could be, just like prescribing medications, a dip in compliance. So owner compliance can make or break it. What are some practical strategies from your handbook that actually improves adherence at home?
Well, I think a big factor is the team, the veterinary team. If they don't feel confident with prescribing exercise and that confidence doesn't show to the client, translate to the client in front of them, the client's not going to do it. So I think first and foremost, the book provides the foundational education that veterinary teams need to be able to confidently prescribe an exercise for patients. Okay, so that's first. If the vet team feels confident, the owner's going to feel better about it. And so what's in our book that allows that confidence to be there? Well, one, we've got some foundational information about, how to do assessments and the different conditions that veterinary teams are going to see on a regular basis. But then we have very guided exercise programs with based on tissue healing and acuity, not some random time point post-op, but it gives people the framework to be able to really make a confident recommendation. And then the other thing that's really cool is, about this book is that and I guess maybe I'll say it because I created a lot of them, but there's videos of all the exercises. So, that's a big thing. You might read something about, a clamshell and it's like, what the heck is a clamshell? I don't know. Is that dinner? What is it? So, it's we have videos of the three of us and some friends doing different, not us actually, but our patients doing exercises, doing these things so that the team can feel confident with saying teaching the owners how to do these exercises at home. And then the other thing that I think is important to understand is you really kind of have to take the client in front of you. You may have a client who is like, give me all the exercises and I'll do them, and they will. And you may have another client who, if you give them more than two or three exercises, they'll do none. In fact, that's what the human literature shows, that exercise compliance is like if you give more than two exercises, the person will do zero for most people in a physical therapy situation. So that's something you kind of have to gauge the client in front of you and their pet as to how compliant they're going to be.
Yeah, not easy to do. Gosh, I need to listen to those words myself.
I do a little recall test with my clients. I'm like, I have this, we have students and the students get history. I'm like, they need to name the exercises they were assigned. If they cannot name the exercises, then we need to drop our expectations.
Yeah. Wait, tell me about the clamshell. What is that one? I
It's
need
like
to
a
know.
side crunch.
Oh, okay.
Your dog should be doing side crunches to help support their paraspinal strength. So that would be a great one. So when you get your book, you need to look that exercise up.
Okay, that's a teaser. We're doing cookie stretches, Dr. Alvarez.
Awesome.
Right, Dr. Kara, if you had to change one mindset in vet med about movement and musculoskeletal health, what would it be? And also, tell everyone the name of the book and where can we get it?
Okay, so the first thing I would say, you asked Leilani earlier about when should we start recommending for exercise as a therapy, and she said right away. I say yesterday because so many of us,
Agreed.
so many of us in our specialty are seeing, patients way down the line where there's really a lot of mobility changes and, problems, and we're trying to catch up. In the general practice world, I mean, exercise should be something, if you're prescribing anything for mobility, exercise should also be a part of that prescription every time. And so I think that's first and foremost, remembering to prescribe exercise. But in order to do that, you really have to talk to your clients and find out, are they having mobility changes? So you have to, that's got to be top of mind to ask the right questions and observe your patients and how they're moving. And then also realize that when we have to make these recommendations for whether it be osteoarthritis or sarcopenia or, geriatric patients that have all the things, or your neuro patients, that there's not going to be one magic bullet that's going to take care of everything. So you have to really talk to your clients about, it's a multifaceted issue. So we have multiple therapeutic interventions that's going to give your pet the best outcome. So that's it. I mean, and I know that's hard. A GP is dealing with a lot of problems, right? They're trying to, get the annual stuff taken care of, sick pet situation taken care of, parasite control, vaccines, all of those things. But this is something exercise and maintaining mobility has been shown to improve lifespan, health span, and reduce mortality and morbidity. And we, it is so that is, it is life or death situation here. It's how
It
important really.
reduces cancer. I mean, it's everything.
Yeah, cognition, heart, all of the things. So I have a picture, or I've got
There
the
it
book.
is.
Yes, it's
Boom.
beautiful. And places to get it, ladies, chime in. But Wiley.com is where I would suggest you go to. That is the publisher of the book, and but it's also available on Amazon and other online locations. And it's fabulous. I mean, when we just got our book, we just got our copy last week, I think, or maybe the week before, and we were all like, oh my gosh, it's so much bigger than we thought it was going to be. How
Yeah.
beautiful. It's so detailed. It's amazing.
The Handbook of Canine Exercise Therapy. That's the name of the book that you see right there. And it's just a couple of pages.
I know, we're like, it's not a handbook anymore. It's a book.
Over
It's
600
bigger,
pages.
bigger than we
Over
thought.
six.
But I do want to mention that this book is meant to be helpful for the general practitioner all the way to a board certified diplomat. So it's really intended to give us those foundational tools that can help any veterinary professional. Now, it's not intended for owners. It's intended for veterinary professionals, including human physical therapists. But it's helpful for everybody, no matter what background you have in rehab.
Love it. And Jennifer, and speaking of the book too, Dr. Jen, how is your the book different from other rehab textbooks currently available?
Yeah, this is a good question because there are several other rehab texts available. And when Wiley approached me about a text, I had to really think about it. What could we offer that's not that what's out there already? And what I realized in looking at the current literature is that there was nothing that actually helped show someone who's brand new to rehab how to do rehab and actually walked them through everything from your initial assessment of a case all the way to the treatment and diagnostics and figuring out what are the appropriate exercises. There's even a section on how what types of rehab forms that you could use, assessment forms for your cases. So I really tried to think about it as if I were to put something together for a friend who's starting out in rehab for the very first time, what would I want to have as a comprehensive source that could also accompany maybe one of these other rehab training programs? Because there's bits and pieces of all these different programs that that are getting a lot of valuable information, but it's never all been an all-in-one place before. Even something as simple as like a section on what muscles are most important to study and how do you stretch the different muscles. We have a chart on that. We also have a companion website that shows you how to do certain ex like all the exercises, as well as manual therapies like massage, joint mobilizations. And so it's also the first text that's been written by three board certified sports medicine rehab specialists who actively do rehab on patients. So we have that very clinical perspective. And also all of us are heavily involved with education of rehab too. So we know what the deficiencies are in veterinary education and how best to kind of approach them in a accessible manner. So also I peppered it with some things that I would have really liked to know. And I'm not the expert of all things rehab. We all see our certain kinds of cases. And so I invited experts. The best one in the working dog field is Dr. Cynthia Otto, and she wrote the section on working dogs. I had Dr. Alice Baker write about athletes and training of juvenile dogs and how to make a rehab plan for juvenile dogs. And we just I don't see that much that many athletes or working dogs in my practice, so I was fascinated by those chapters. We also have a section on critical patients, and so rehabilitating patients that are in the ICU and what things that we should be concerned about and what underlying conditions can impact the recovery. So that's what I was meant for, something for everybody, is that there's very specific chapters that target different kinds of patients that you may not see, or you might not see that many of in practice, to help support your treatment plans. We also have one
Yeah.
on veterinary orthotics and prosthetics as well, because
Nice.
I noticed that that was also missing from the current text is, okay, we know about these things, but what do we do with these patients? How do we make a plan for them? We didn't really have anything like that available.
Fantastic
And
job.
the other thing I wanted to add, which is really big right now, we're getting so much education in geriatric patients, but we have a chapter co-authored with Mary Gardner. I think a lot of people
Yes.
will recognize that name, and how to tailor exercise programs for our senior and geriatric patients. So yeah, we really tried to think about all the different needs that dogs have because they're very wide ranging. You can't rehab a dog post-op TPLO the same if they're 2 years old versus they're 11 years old. And so, how do we change that according to the specific needs of the patient?
Or if they're a 2-year-old couch potato versus a 2-year-old like agility dog, you know, it's very, very different.
Same age, but different tasks. Exactly.
Fantastic job, doctors. Thank you so much for put congratulations, by the way, on the book. That's phenomenal. You know, probably a huge feather in your cap on that one because not easy to do.
Thank you.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank
You're
you. And
welcome.
I want to just shout out Dr. Jen Repack, because she's the one who was the driving force for this. This was her vision, and Leilani and I are just lucky enough to help her. But it's been an awesome experience for the three of us. I mean, sometimes not so awesome, but most of the time, most of the time, awesome experience. And I love working in this field of strong, smart women, and this is kind of my this is our Super Bowl. This is our Super
Yes.
Bowl, having this book getting published. So super proud.
Yeah,
This is.
I couldn't agree more. Jen was my first resident, and to see her, you know, I feel like as a mentor, you know, you did a good job when they surpass you, you know, when they reach that pinnacle that you haven't even reached. So yeah, I'm so proud of Jen and for including me and Kara in this project that I don't think any of us imagined how big it was, but we're so proud of the outcome, and we hope it's helpful for all the veterinary practitioners out there.
Oh,
Not for
thanks,
nothing, but Jen, I know that that's got to feel
Brian.
so good to hear that. We talk a lot about mentorship in vet med, and this is such a, I'm not trying not to get choked up because it's such a wonderful feeling to hear and see that in action. And look at you now. How does that make you feel when she says that?
Oh, so great.
I know.
And it was funny because I remember us talking about this idea of this book, and then Layla is like, I don't know if I could write a book. I'm like, come on, I've never heard you say you can't
Love it.
anything.
Well, congratulations to the listeners. We'll put all the information in the show notes as well, where you can obtain the book. Fantastic information. Ladies, doctors, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And thank you for all the great work that you do for our profession.
Thank you so
Thank you.
much.
You're
Thank you.
welcome. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to rate this wonderful podcast as we continue to grow it. And we'll see you next time right here in the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum. Awesome.